You know that moment after class ends when the noises fade and you're just sitting there with a sketchbook in your hand and 100 different thoughts going through your mind? Well, that's where this episode lives. This one's not for the students. This one's for us, the teachers, the artists, the ones still trying to figure it out as we go. I want to talk about change. The kind you don't plan for, the kind that creeps up when your old ways of teaching don't quite land anymore. When you see your students freeze at the world and they think about that one word, final, or portfolio piece, or graded work, and you start to realize that I don't think it's time for them to make a shift. I think I need one. This episode is part of a quiet series, sort of something that I'm trying to do a little bit on my own, sort of a personal matter, I guess, in a way, but I'm going to call them sketch notes after the bell. This is going to be a place where I share my thoughts that show up when the classroom goes quiet. You know, no scripts, no expectations, just honest reflections on how we teach, why we teach, and how creativity continues to shape who we are. So today I'm unpacking the portfolio, not as a project, but as a process. What changed in my students? What changed in me? And what am I learning, or what do I got to figure out by letting go of how I've always done these things? Student change has to equal my change, right? This is something that is very tough to deal with after 22 years of teaching, because I felt like I've done it right up until now, and now I'm second guessing everything. I used to think a strong project came down to clear direction and a solid rubric and trusting the students to bring their best. But this year, I watched students tune out the moment they heard anything about a final project, a description, a logo, an illustration, photography. Those words became immediate shuts down. And I don't think it was because they didn't care. It was because they were overwhelmed by the pressure of possible perfection, paralyzed by this idea that final meant there was no more space to explore, to question, or to fail. I didn't see it as clearly before, but I see it now. And it really hit me hard because I wasn't seeing laziness. I just was seeing confusion and fear. But I also saw them start to make a decision that they didn't want to do that project because it wasn't what they were hoping to learn in my class. And if my students were changing, I guess I really only had two options. And the first one is simple as a teacher, right? We can blame them. But I think I got to go with the second ones and I got to make the change. So I stopped assuming that one big project or one final project or one section specific to a 2-week lesson plan, like learning Adobe Illustrator and doing a logo for the final project, I don't think that was working. I started to need to ask better questions. What would make this feel exciting, not exhausting? How can I protect the integrity of the assignment and give students space to be strange, to be weird, to be wrong, to make mistakes, to be real? You know, this shift, it opened everything up. Like, it cracked open the whole wide idea for me. And suddenly it wasn't about assigning the project. It was about creating conditions for creativity. So yeah, the students' change shook me, but it also grew me. I learned to stop designing projects like endpoints and start designing them like launch pads. The portfolio became less of a measuring stick and more of a mirror, one that showed me what my students needed and what I needed to become, which led to the next big move, scrapping the single option project and stepping into an unknown with some radical choices. Giving them 4 to 5 different options was way simpler, and I got way easier results with this new style. Let's talk about what happened when I stopped controlling the outcome and starting creating these options. Here's the thing about resetting the rubric, right? A new way to a final project. If we talk about tradition, we understand it's comfortable. It works until it doesn't. For years, I gave one solid final assignment. It was clean, polished, and proven. But suddenly, it became a cage. It boxed the students in before they even started. They were failing the project. They were checking out before they could even begin. So I did what artists do when something doesn't fit. I remixed it. I opened the gates and dropped the phrases, here's your project, or let's make this specific, or we're going to learn this, right? And yeah, it got messy. Some students struggled with choice, some flailed a bit, but others, they soared. Not everyone finished on the same path, but they all arrived somewhere real. And that's the point. I wasn't handing them a template, I was giving them a challenge. Show me what matters to you. Use what you've learned and make it personal. And yeah, well, the rubric, which I hate that word, rubric, but it had to change. I had to make space for fluid goals, flexible checkpoints, and still keep the bar high, because freedom without structure, well, that's chaos. But structure without freedom, that's a straitjacket. So I built a rubric that protected the vision of the project, but also protected the student's voice within it. Clear language, simple expectations, and space to grow. And yeah, built-in safeguard for IEPs with progressive-based grading for those days when life hits a little harder than it hits on the deadline. That wasn't about lowering the bar. It was about removing the barriers. It really sounds really cliche when I say it, but really, that's what we had to do. That's what I needed to do, right? Now, sometimes we have to realize that students just weren't struggling with the work. They were struggling with how to do the work, not because they weren't capable, but because the path to success felt a little foggy. Too many doors, kind of like a hallway, no clear signs, trying to figure things out. So I had to rethink everything. I stopped treating the assignments like a solo act and started treating it like a performance with a full crew. That meant creating an entire system where students could find their way, not by guessing, but exploring with intention. So here's what I built. I made mini videos, right? Quick, human, and visuals. Chunking ebooks down. I never really went to that level, but it's exactly what I love to do. I can design the book around the information that I want them to learn. They can use it at their own pace. I gave them checkoff sheets to control. Not to control what they were doing, but also like give them a sense of progress. Sounds like we've heard that before in education, right? And then here I am doing a podcast to sort of give them an opportunity that if they want to listen to what I have to say about the work, it's another opportunity and a structure that they can follow. And yeah, I did it all with IEPs in mind. Because meeting students where they are isn't a bonus feature, it's the foundational design. What I learned, creativity can thrive in confusion. The more engagement, more risk-taking, more weird, brilliant personal projects. When you build scaffolding, students don't just survive the assignment, they climb with it. Next, let's talk about this grounding all this creativity in a real world energy, because if we want students to believe in what they're making, we've got to show them how it connects to something bigger. You ever hear a student say, why or when or how or when am I ever going to use this? It's not disrespect, it's disconnect. And honestly, they deserve an answer. So I flipped the question. What if everything we did in class had a mirror into the real world? This year, I made a shift, one I should have made a long time ago. I started designing every lesson, every project with a through line to real creative careers, not just skills, but applications. Our product photography unit, we framed it as a shoot, like a vintage brand stylist, and talked about mock-ups, flat lays, visual story, and client vibes. Our design project, we studied ad campaigns, experimental typography, album covers, pieces that students could imagine their portfolios in their resumes. Even concept development got a glow up, right? We started doing more with mood boards and pitch decks and brand identification, like a real creative agency. The message was simple. This isn't just for school. This is how the world works, right? And when students saw that, they showed up different. Not perfect. But present, they were just turning, they weren't just turning in their projects. They were building their portfolios and planning for their futures with a solid understanding of expectations. Creativity without context is decoration. Creativity with a purpose, that's career training. And now, well, we've got to talk about the wild card in the room, the newest member of my teaching team. Yeah, I'm talking about AI, and I'm specifically talking about ChatGPT. And how, instead of fearing the tech, I let this fuel the students' choice, voice, and innovation. By the last stretch of the year, things usually feel sort of worn and tired. Energy dips, students are juggling finals, burnout creeps in, and let's be real, creative momentum gets shaky. But this year I tried something new, right? I brought in a backup, and I call him Artie Masters, and he is my custom ChatGPT. So instead of assigning one-size-fits-all finals, I let the students co-design their last project with help from chat. I gave them prompts like, what's your dream job? What medium most likely do you like to use? What problem do you want to solve with your art? Like, but remember, for some of these students, I've had them for at least a year, if not two and three. So I could pretty much have a good idea of what they were expecting to do when they went away to college or into their career, which was almost easier because after 22 years, I could understand illustration, marketing, web design, character development, fine arts, painting. I could see where these students wanted to go and hopefully understand what these next couple weeks would rely on to want to work on to finish the year strong, right? So this wasn't really about outsourcing thinking. It was about unlocking our agency. It gave me a partner that didn't judge, didn't rush, didn't say no. And for the students who were stuck, this freedom meant everything. We used chat to develop fun, specific projects that they could build out on their own pace with their own ideas. So yeah, this year, my portfolio evaluation wasn't clean or traditional. It was experimental, responsive, and well, human. And you could say Steve Bruss, because I was going through all this. And believe me, it was a struggle. I changed how I taught. I deleted 170 some videos off of YouTube. I totally threw out my entire curriculum that I've been using for years and started all over from scratch, right? Because, you know, they're not data points, right? I can't look at my students as data points. This has to be, I guess, my reflection, my process, my rebellion. If you're an educator out there wondering if it's time to break the rubric, well, it is. So here's what I'm saying. Sketch loudly, teach louder, and never stop evolving. If this episode lights a fire under your sketchbook or just gave you something to think about, there's so much more where that came from. Check out oddfishenergy.com. It's packed with bold, weird, wildly fun courses designed to help you build a portfolio that's loud, authentic, and undeniably yours. If this pod helped you out today, share it with a fellow rebel. Leave a review, drop a few stars. Seriously, it means a lot and helps more artists find this crew. Keep sketching loudly, stay iconic, and as always, make it weird enough to stick in their brains forever. I'm Steve Bruss, and I'll catch you in the next one.